Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in. Huddle with me, Bram. No Maxine today, but MT is in the building with us.
What's up, Damnation?
And joining us after just way too long, a long time Golden State fan with ties to Warriors World and the Light Years podcast, a former member of Uninterrupted, the athlete empowerment brand founded by LeBron and Maverick, the current host of the Ringer Wrestling Pod, the podcast manager at the Ringer, and a guy who always protects his money with ninjas, Mr. Benjamin Cruz. What's going on, Ben?
Bram, Marcus, thank you so much for having me back. I've gotten a lot of feedback in my podcast career just on stuff that I've said, no more than the bank heist episode. You know, like, it was either really good team, or why would you pick Shaq? It's obvious that that's Shaq, and your team would be busted immediately. So it was one of the most interesting thought experiments I think I've ever done on podcasting. So thank you for having me back too.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're not the only one getting feedback. In fact, here are some other intros I almost gave and then threw them to the wayside. A guy who did so well last time, he showed up in our Apple reviews. A guy whose muscle selection in our bank heist has left me incredibly jealous, and this one is a random aside, but a compliment nonetheless. A guy who's lost in the sauce, Golden State questions, continue to entertain the shit out of me. So yeah, you were on my mind this week, Ben.
No, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, I'm keeping that lost in the sauce thing with Austin and Pasha going as long as I can. Until they say something, there will always be a Golden State Warriors related question in that segment.
Know that since you've shared that with me and MT, I don't know if you live the off guard with Austin Rivers. He's got his own feed now. I'm a big fan of the show. I blame Ben for helping me through my hatred of Austin Rivers. But they do a trivia thing, not every episode, but close enough. Ben comes up with the questions and he shared with us that he hasn't told them, but there's always one question at least that has a Warriors answer. And I'm now nervous for you, Ben. Like, I don't know, they're not going to bust you out. It's not like they care that you're giving Warriors answers, but I'd like every time that you do the one with the Warriors, I'm like, oh, here it is. Are they going to give him shit? Like, what's it going to be? So I'm riding along with you, Ben.
They give me enough shit for it. I wore a Warriors hat onto a recording one time, and it didn't go well. It was the championship hat from 22. Let's just say it wasn't as friendly of a, it wasn't well received as you might think.
Well, we received it well for what it's worth. And with that intel, let's hop in, boys. A lot to talk about, and let's start with our glass half full. So Ben, this is our excuse to kind of show to the audience we've been paying attention. We've been watching recent Warriors basketball. So look back at either all of the games or just that last game against Detroit, anything you want to do, and give us something you like or don't like about the Warriors so far.
Okay. I'll start positive. I'll go glass half full with this. I am thoroughly enjoying, and last game was against the Pistons was an example of this, just another one. The Chris Paul experience has been nothing but pure joy. And I do remember last time I was on, you know, we ran through the question of who would be the most important Warrior. And at the time I said Chris Paul. And as of right now, I've never really felt that good about an answer on any pod that I've done except that one. Because, I mean, the dude just keeps things going. You know, and his performance so far this year, obviously hasn't shot the ball well, right? Aside from last game aside, but that was last game and basically all season. Just Chris Paul has just been this jolt of energy that I didn't know that we all needed collectively. because the Warriors group chats that I'm in, there's just a completely different tune now with Chris Paul on the screen. And it's objectively hilarious, right? Because for years, this entire man's career, if you scroll up on all of your Warriors fan group chats, it's just shitting on Chris Paul, right? And now it's just in 8 games, that dude has erased all of that. We have forgotten everything. We've forgiven. forgotten, and rightfully so. I mean, he just drives that second unit, and even the minutes that he crosses over with Steph and the starters, you just feel good whenever he's on there. You feel like they're going to be on a right track for the rest of the game, and it's surprising that honestly that it's been this effective. And I guess, you know, to kind of answer the other part of your question, something that has been a little bit of a downer is the Andrew Wiggins aspect of this. CP has covered up a lot of that because, look, if CP's not having a good season and the Warriors are, I don't know, 4-4 instead of 6-2, I think we're having the light is shining much brighter on Andrew Wiggins than it currently is.
I don't think there's any question, man. And MT, I'm eager to hear from you, but just a quick follow-up on CP3. And I'm going to use a bad stat to illustrate how good he's been, right? So this is before the Detroit game, but heading into it, he was shooting 4.8% from three. I've never seen that, dude. I've never seen a single-digit percentage on three-point percentage analysis. And despite that, having the worst fucking three-point percentage I've ever seen in my life after decades and decades of decades of watching basketball, he has still been my favorite part of this year. And that includes a transformative Steph performance. And in fact, right. I like your answer so much, Ben. I was going to do this later, but I'll do it now. All right. We've got an award to hand out. We're going to call the award the Heel Turn Award. For the villain who made the biggest turn to become a hero, okay? Here are our nominations. Darth Vader for his work in Star Wars.
Sure, sure.
All right. T-800, Terminator for his work in Terminator 2. Because complete, you know, real heel work there. Deckard Shaw, that's the Jason Statham. Okay, yeah, exactly right in Fast and Furious. Or really any bad guy from Fast and Furious.
They all become good guys.
Yeah. Right? Or CP3 for his work in Golden State. And I mean, it's a loaded field, dude. It's not an easy award to hand out, but I mean, go ahead. You led us down this aisle early. Who do you give it out to?
I mean, for the sake of this pod and for this entire year, you got to go CP just because of the sample size that we've been given, right? Darth Vader, obviously there are years that we don't see where he's terrorizing the entire universe. I get it, you know. Not a nice guy for up until he throws the Emperor off the platform. Spoiler alert for everyone who hasn't seen that yet. But again, CP, the majority of his career, he's just been such a Warriors antagonist, right? And in high profile situations, it's not like what the Kings are now to the Warriors, right? Where they're kind of the new rivals because they're kind of in the way that they're getting good. CP's been there for years.
Yeah.
And the vitriol that has, look, I could say this now that he's part of the Warriors. I have a picture with Chris Paul from back in peak at Warriors enemy Chris Paul. I have a signed pair of shoes from Chris Paul from the times when he was with the Clippers, again, peak Warriors, enemy Chris Paul. But now, again, that heel turn, again, this is after 8 games where we're just like,
oh, I'm on board. Dude, Ben.
Yeah.
This is the correct answer. It turns out there's actually an objectively right answer to this. It is, in fact, D. All right, here's how I thought about it, and then MT to you. But all these other guys, they didn't switch teams and continue to fuck over our heroes. You know, like Darth Vader, Empire, the entire time, dude. Like, he stayed there until he joined our team. Terminator, they didn't, like, leave the robots and go to another team and still wanted to fuck over Sarah Connor. It was just one person. CP3 has gone to multiple stops. Every place he went, one of his go-to goals was to screw us over, and now he's joined us. So, I mean, oh, maybe a little hyperbolic, but I'm going CP3 here. MT, what's your answer to this question? And bleed it into a glass half full or empty for us.
Yeah, it's got to be Chris Paul. It's clean sweep for Chris Paul in terms of that turnaround. I think the only person who could rival him is if he joined the Warriors would be James Harden, but I don't think that's even allowable. I'm pretty sure that's in the CBA that he can't join the Warriors. So we'll just leave that at that.
And honorable mention, just because I didn't throw him out there, Professor Snape, I almost threw him in this. Loki as well for a Marvel guy. There was a few people who were there.
But Snape was secretly on the good side the entire time.
See, this is why I love you, Ben. And I was honestly worried about dropping that reference. And the fact that you not only accepted it, but then broke it down that way makes me very happy. This very happy.
Nice. And I'll go glass half full. I mean, I'm with Ben. I think, you know, CP3 has just been our superpower was turnovers for a long time. And he's the kryptonite to that in the good way, right? Like the last four games, 29 assists, zero turnovers. That's just the antithesis of how we operate and, you know, the exact opposite of Jordan Poole. So, you know, it's got to go to CP3 for a glass half full. Glass half empty, it's still a little concerning that we're at times falling into the rhythm where we just expect the other teams to give up and we're going to win the game. You know, Detroit is young and, you know, they have some athleticism and, you know, shout out to Thompson. He looks like he's going to be a legit player, but we shouldn't have to rely on Steph going nuclear Steph again to get past Detroit. So I'm just a little worried that, you know, the reliance on Steph to be Steph is still tilting a little too much that way, especially when he's 35 and he's starting the season strong, but it's a long season. So hopefully that'll balance back out and we'll, you know, find our defensive identity a little bit stronger. And, you know, like Moses Moody had a great game. Hopefully that'll continue and that'll be something that takes some of the load off of Steph having to come in and hit a few threes and close the game out every time.
I have too much optimism, like too much. I'm going to go too far and I'm going to expose myself again as a homer. Right. So first let's handle the negative and I'll just embrace yours, MT. In fact, I'll add a stat to it. There's only been one player over these first, what have they played? Eight games who have scored more than 20 points, whose name is not Steph Curry, and it's Dario Saric. And so, you know, can we maintain this? Can we win 6 out of every 8 when Steph's the only guy going over 20? No. So, you know, I'm a little worried and I've got a question about Wiggins down the line, but all right, that's out of the way. Let's go. Optimism. Another follow-up to what you just said, MT. And it's the turnover ratio. I think CP3 over the entire 8 games, 63 assists to 6 turnovers, which is bananas. Steph commented on it and said, that's just not in my game. That's like a vegetarian saying that eating steaks isn't in his game. You know, like, no, that's not what you do well. But it's still, you know, it's great to see. And then, let's see, small analysis. I like that Draymond Green's hitting corner threes. I like games, back-to-back game winners by the Splash Brothers that end with 0.2 seconds left. You know, these little things I've already really enjoyed. But bigger, okay? And I'll acknowledge, too early. This is way too early. But shit, we still get to say it. If you sat down with Steve Kerr and got him just drunk enough where he wanted to talk and be honest, and you asked him, okay, dude, after 10 games, what did you want to see? Like, what would mean things are going really well? I think we would have checked every box he would bring up. You know, he'd bring up CP3. Did he fit into the lineup? Is that working? Holy shit, check. He would bring up, well, how are our vibes? You know, we spent all year last year hating each other. You know, and you showed that on the road. So, is the locker room together? And can we see that by winning on the road? Check. Yes, absolutely. You know, were we able to bring in those guys this year that we didn't have last year? The Nemanja Bjelicas of the world. Again, yes, Dario Saric. So too early, but based on the information we have after these 8 games, all the concerns we rolled into, they're addressing optimistically, you know? So I'm very glass half full right now.
And on that too, I mean, on the bench unit, right? I mean, obviously Chris Paul is going to take a good amount of that shine and rightfully so. And same with Saric. I think Saric has been, I wish he would, you know, he could finish around the basket a little bit more consistently. That dude's just jumping into shot blockers like you would not believe, but hitting the pick and pop three at a nice rate. I mean, the Kuminga Moody stuff, the growth there has been really, really encouraging because those are two big question marks that going into the season, you know, when you talked about Kuminga, I think it was really high ceiling and or low floor with him. Not a lot of people talked about the kind of the middle ground of, hey, what if he's just solid, right? Like, what if he has, what if he's good from that free throw line jumper? He just hits all the time, right? Like, that's just an offensive option. And it has been this year, right? Like, again, I still cringe a little bit when he settles for the three because right now I feel like he is the Warrior most capable of putting pressure on the rim and just getting to the cup and you know, be like, it should be Wiggins, yep. But for whatever reason, he's not doing it. So you know, would you rather see Kuminga just kind of taking it to the rack as often as possible because he's that athletic? Absolutely. But again, the fact that he has this in-between game where, dare I say, whenever he takes that mid-range jumper now, that at the elbow or at the free throw line, you're like, oh, that looks good.
Yes.
And you're not cringing, you know, whenever he's taking like a wing three. So, I mean, his growth in that aspect where he's now an actual useful rotation piece, right? And then Moody as well, where, you know, the way that this dude's been yo-yoed in and out of the lineup since he's kind of came into the league, right? Where he won't play in the regular season. Then all of a sudden Kerr throws him in the most important playoff games. To watch him carve out a role too, where, you know, the three hasn't been falling as consistently in the last couple of games as it did at the beginning of the season. But he's just one of these guys who's constantly in the right spot, right? Like him and GP2 are the same, where they're just, the way they read things defensively. I mean, GP's more of a lockdown guy than Moses is, but Moses is just, he knows the passing lanes. He can jump into them, deflections, all that stuff that, you know, again, deflections are, they're tracked by teams, but not necessarily, you know, they're not going to give you defensive player. They're not going to count towards defensive player of the year,
right?
Statistics. This dude's just on it, man. And it's just these small connective plays that you're like, oh yeah, if he's in there for 15 to 20 minutes, it's not a nightmare anymore. And that's two huge upgrades.
100%. Let's put these two things together. So yes, JK and Moses's development is fucking awesome. Watching what it means to actually work to develop somebody's game is also incredible. Where CP3 is putting these guys in a position to succeed on an almost night-to-night basis, and the difference that's making for them. My daughter just recently learned how to swim, and I could have done the move of like bringing her to a pool, sit on the side, and then just kind of watch, you know, and maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't, which kind of seem what we were doing with JK early on, you know, like figure it out, sink or swim. Yeah. Let's see where this goes. But it's not what we did, Ben. We hired an instructor who brought her out, put her in very specific little places. Okay, here's where you learn how to kick. Here's where you learn, you know, this stroke. And watching CP3 put JK in these little positions. Okay, you seal them off? That's an easy layup. All right, you went to the lane? I'll find you. He is developing him, something we have never seen. So, yes, man, I think their development is another giant upside. Boys. Let's go to our golden questions. All right. So, Ben, this is our mailbag. Always deals with the Warriors, occasionally gets personal. This one does both. MT, why don't you take this first question? So the question is this the best second unit the Warriors have had during the dynastic run? And so I've done a little research, and I, you know, disclaimer, they don't do hockey subs really in the NBA. Occasionally we see that, you know, but more often than not, it's kind of like a mixture, but I'm treating this like a hockey sub question. Okay. So our current, if it's a hockey sub bench, is CP3, GP2, Saric, JK, Moody. All right. So that's who we are. We're comparing them to the rest. These are from our championship years, 2014-15, Sean, Andre, Leandro, David Lee, Maurice Spates. 2016-17, again, Andre, Sean Livingston, Matt Barnes, David West, and then some combination of Pat McCaw and Zaza Pachulia. I just like saying Pat McCaw, by the way. I remember how much I disliked that.
McCaw.
He was so fucking annoying. Didn't he leave us and like end up in Toronto and win a title there too?
Yeah.
2017-18, Quinn Cook, Andre, David West, and then mixture of Nick Young, Loon, and Jordan Bell. And then finally, in the 2022 season, Damian Lee, GP2, Andre, OPJ, and Nemanja. What do you think, MT? Is this our best bench unit so far?
I think it's second. I think the first strength in numbers edges them out just a little bit. It's hard to go against David West. And, you know, he was just a clutch player, you know, and brought a lot on and off the court. And you have Mo Buckets in there and, you know, Livingston and Andre, I feel like they were right in the prime of what they were doing. So I would give the slight edge to them, but I think this current unit is a strong second place.
I'll narrow it down to that finals. I agree with him, Ben. Who do you take of those two? All right. So what we're looking at is CP3 on one side, Sean Livingston on the other, GP2 on one side, Andre Iguodala on the other, Dario Saric on one side, Leandro Barbosa, JK, David Lee, Moody, Mo Buckets. Who would you take of those two?
So this one's tricky because I think my answer is the original, the 14-15 championship team. bench, just because, I mean, they proved it. They were enough to win a championship when, again, at the beginning of that season, I remember no one picked them to win the title, right? That just kind of came out. I remember ESPN's predictions. Ethan Sherwood Strauss was the only one who picked the Warriors to win. And I remember at the time, even myself as a Warriors fan, thinking,
did he pick it?
That's insane. Yeah. What?
Dude, they did win it. And I think that's an insane pick right now.
Yeah, you know,
like
exactly.
Years later with 2020 right. Hindsight. Yeah,
exactly. So I will say, so that one, because of there's obviously proof in the pudding a little bit. This is, you know, the current bench iteration has a smaller sample size. The only reason I have even some hesitancy is because of Chris Paul. I mean, that's a Hall of Fame point guard,
right?
Leading your second unit. I love S-Dot, man. Everything he brought is essentially what I thought Chris Paul would bring at a higher level, and that has proven to be true so far through 8 games. There are the Spates aspect of the original lineup and the Barbosa aspect were always two parts of contention for me, just because Barbosa would just he was very Jordan Poole-esque, right? Where it was just he was either on it, where you're like, oh, we're pushing the lead without the starters, and this is over. Or he'd go one for eight, and you're like, ah, what was the point of having him in there? And defensively, wasn't great, you know, just kind of liability. And the same thing with Spates, just a bigger version of Leandro Barbosa. So that being said, they were able to kind of cobble that together and kind of figure things out. I mean, so I do pick that unit. I do. This unit, but I think that this is a great question to revisit at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
I think with, you know, Kuminga's growth and as him and CP get more connected, can they connect on a couple lobs? Like that lob threat was just never a thing with that first, you know, that 14-15 team. And then that's something the Warriors have been searching for, just kind of, you know, that vertical spacing throughout this entire run. And they even lacked that in 22, right? Like that whole championship run. So it's going to be really interesting to see if they can develop that here. I still think they need a little bit more shooting. That's probably a little bit of a, I don't know, but the 14-15 lineup was a lot of fun.
Forgot how good they were. Just reading it's filled with starters. S-Dot could have been a starter. Andre chose to come off the bench. Right. David Lee was a starter till he got hurt. Mo Buckets could have started for a shitty team and friend of the podcast, so we got to say that.
Yeah.
And Leandro, I mean, yeah, dude, like that's a very competent team. You know what? I am going to pick the 2014-2015, but I'm going to end it with a compliment for CP3. So it kind of feels like I'm cheating a little bit, which is perfect. And it's actually a story and off the court report. My wife and I went to the game against Sacramento. We had been to a preseason game, but that's the first game this year we went to. And the thing I was most interested in watching was the moments right before the starting lineup was mentioned, right? Because it's that time when you're differentiated as a starter. When you're sitting on that bench and the lights go down, you know, and now everybody knows you are different from the moment you were in junior high. That's when everybody in the crowd knows, oh, those are the important people, you know, junior high, high school, college, the end of the pro forever. And so I was really interested. How does CP3 deal with that? Because we're worried about, like, how does he mix in? And that moment when everyone was on the bench and they're waiting to be called out, what CP3 was doing was checking in with everybody else. He had a handshake that he'd made up with Podzinski. He gave a random ass hug to Moody. He came up and whispered something into JK's ear. He was not feeling bad for himself at all. He had completely embraced it, and it fits into what we've been saying, dude. He has bought all the way in, and you know that's why he was able to edge out Darth Vader. I mean, it's not an easy award to win.
Yeah,
you know, and now he has it. All right, here's our next question. Whoa. Warriors have played multiple teams without a starter. And then they gave us some examples. Suns without KD, Thunder without SGA, Detroit without Jalen Duren. And then the question is, what's your personality? Do you wish they'd played them at full strength, or is a win a win a win? So I'll go first here. I don't give a fuck if the entire starting five is hurt. I watch this team get their ass beat for 3 decades. Nobody cared. Nobody gave us a lifeline. Nobody talked about how their draft was terrible or they had this injury luck. So if this is the year where we suddenly, you know, everything matches up every time and we play them without their stars throughout, I don't care. I'm on board. It doesn't bother me at all. But I might be. I think Marcus is going to disagree with me. Ben, I'm not sure where you are. I know you've been through some real hardship on this, so you might be with me. I'm not sure. Let's hear Marcus tell us he would prefer have real competition, and then we'll get your answer, Ben. MG?
I'm actually with you on this one, Bram. To me, you know, you play with the people who are out there, especially the teams that we played. Like Sacramento didn't have De'Aaron Fox, but you know, like that was one of the first games they didn't have him. And usually teams are amped up, and that's the trap game when you don't have your star. So, you know, and you know, the Suns didn't have Bradley Beal for the first game, but we didn't have Draymond. So, you know, like to me, it's all a wash. You play with the players that are on the court, and you know, it takes the full team to win the championship. So it doesn't matter if it's game two or game 82. So, I think it's a win is a win. And, you know, it's, I don't think there's a asterisk by any of our 6-2 record.
Let's go. Ben, are you a purist?
This is where I'm at. I think about if we had this exact schedule, or the Warriors had this exact schedule last year, they're not 6-2, right?
No.
They're 4-4 at best, 3-5 more than likely. Because again,
2-6 most right. likely.
Two and six most likely. You're right. Because also the majority of these games have been on the road too. Right. I remember reading a bunch of articles last year that tried to break down the Warriors' road struggles, where they were, you know, Zach Cram wrote something for us at the Ringer. I think it was Hollinger at the Athletic, and that was literally the titles of these of their articles. So naturally, I tapped in, and by the end of the article, the conclusion was basically, we don't fucking know. Like, this is, I think it's, and basically the answer was, I think it's vibes. So with that, again, from that perspective of what would this team have done with last year's roster, they would not have been playing this way. Other than like, with that, again, the Warriors are going to come, they're going to run into this soon where I'm sure Steph's going to sit out a game or two due to injury, Chris Paul, Clay, like it's going to even out, right? And you play who you play.
Yep.
And so none of that stuff. If there's anyone out, I saw one person say that, like, you know, the Warriors have gotten lucky. They've won a couple of these games via buzzer beater or damn near buzzer beater. And so look, you got to play who's in front of you. Are the Warriors supposed to throttle down because De'Aaron Fox isn't playing, because Jalen Duren's not playing? And in some cases, they actually do, right? The Warriors, in this dynastic run, they've been synonymous with that, right? It's just they will play down to their competition. And the fact that they aren't now, with, again, a lot of moving, still a lot of parts that are getting to know each other, is actually more encouraging than anything. And at the end of it, it's all going to even out,
yes,
you know, with all these teams.
That is 1,000% fair. I'll add a little sprinkle of homerism. Also, it seems like whenever the hell a star is out, someone who you consider historically mediocre goes off. Lou Dort was like 1,000 for 1,000, dude. Isaiah Stewart couldn't miss a three. There was a guy named Josh Okogie, unstoppable. There's a guy named Moutier who I had never heard of at any point. He was playing for Detroit last night, who was just hitting and ones like it was the easiest thing on earth.
Unbelievable.
If they reached out to like the 5,000th person who entered the building, you know, literally like a fan who just had walked in and they're like, you know what, you're starting tonight, I think he'd go 7 of 10. He would like a really solid shooting percentage and, you know, great defense. So it has in some way edged it out. And the follow up to what you were saying about last year's articles about their road woes couldn't be more right. And watching the narrative slowly change, like, bad in the beginning of the season. Well, you know, the defense doesn't look to be traveling, but it'll probably show up when Draymond, you know, really gets up to speed. And then towards the end, it was just like, well, maybe they'll just win all the games at home during the playoffs and that'll be enough. Like, they didn't even try to explain it anymore. It just was what it was.
Basketball historians are going to look back in years, you know, in like 30 years, they're going to look back at the, you know, this entire run that the Warriors are on, and they're going to wonder what the hell happened the year after they won a championship. Okay. And it's going to come down to Draymond punch somebody
bingo
on his team.
Ben, all they'll have to do is listen to press conferences from this year, and what they'll hear is Draymond Green saying, want to know what happened last year? Jordan Poole. Want to know what happened last year? Jordan Poole. I mean, he's already said it like 20 times. Meanwhile, Jordan has said nothing. You know, he's just over there doing his own thing in Washington, but we don't have to jump down that in particular rabbit hole.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app.
Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here's a question I was worried about, boys.
Are you worried about Wiggins? Okay, so we've intimated it. Let me put some numbers and then give me an answer. So what we wanted, what we've been talking about, best case, he becomes finals Wiggs, right? So here's the numbers from finals Wiggs. He averaged about 32 minutes a game. He scored 18 points per game on 44% from the field, 30% from three. And the biggest number, the one that we all kind of liked, was the rebounds, 8.8. Okay, so let's compare them. 39.2 minutes in the finals, 25 minutes so far this season. 18 points per game in the finals, 10.8 so far this season on 41% and 17% from three. That 17% is compared to 30%. And then finally, the big number, 8.8 rebounds in the finals, 3.4 rebounds so far this season. So look, eight games, right? Could be real easy. He's got to get in shape. Everybody needs to get used to the new rotations, whatever it is. Or is there something more sinister happening? So to the question, are we worried about Wiggins? Whoever wants to take it first, because I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what to do with this.
I don't know if I'm worried. I guess I'll put it on a scale. I think I'm still at a 5. And I think that's out of 10, because I'm more confused about where he's at. It's just his attacks to the rim aren't aggressive. Like he's not trying to throw down at all. He's going up soft every time. Anytime he gets he can get downhill. You think it's going to be the Andrew Wiggins of old, who's just super athletic, could jump out of the gym, and he's just going to yam it down somebody's throat.
Yep.
And he always goes for these touch floaters. You know, he's trying to lay it up softly. And he's getting contested, to everyone they've played so far. To their credit, they've been defending him really well at the rim. And again, his jumper's not falling right now. You figure that should, in theory, even there's no way he's going to continue to shoot 17% from three. I just refuse to believe that. I refuse to believe he's going to continue to shoot 41% from the field, which is what he's shooting right now, right?
Yeah.
And again, like looking at it, you mentioned he's averaging 10.8 points per game right now. His low before this was ironically last year, 17.1. But again, that's it's a 7-point drop off.
Right.
Like that's got to even out at some point. It's his aggression levels right now that are the most concerning, because he seems so passive just overall, not even offensively. Even defensively, he'll have these moments where you kind of see the lockdown defender, Andrew Wiggins, of past years. But he doesn't seem aggressive enough overall. And that's concerning, because again, with the starting unit, which was the best starting unit in all of basketball last year, this year I saw Slater tweet this earlier, or maybe it was last night. It was minus 23. They're minus 23 in 67 minutes together, which is obviously Draymond just came back, so they don't have the full scale of what that's going to look like. But also a 131 defensive rating. That's ridiculous, right? Like the worst defensive rating team in the league right now is the Wizards, and they have a 120. So to have a 131 defensive rating is ridiculous. And so again, these numbers almost seem hyperbolic in terms of where Wiggins is, in terms of where that starting unit is. Again, it's an aesthetic thing right now. When you're watching him play, he just doesn't have that zip, right? Where you're like, are you going to find this at some point?
No,
like
hell
the
yes.
jumper. Is fine. You're struggling, but drive with more aggression.
Dude, like, we sound like Minnesota fan, right? I mean, like that's all that we sound like Jimmy Butler describing a Timberwolves practice. Like fuck, it's right there. Like use your claws, dude. You're this giant bear. MT, what do you think, man? Does he wear out of this? Are you worried?
I'm not worried, but I think all of it will be solved if we focus on the defensive end. To Ben's point, like the fact that the defensive rating is 130, I didn't know that. That's just crazy. But, like you look at last year, we ended the season 14th ranked best defense. This year we're at 12 right now, smaller sample size. But the year before that, when we won, we were two. And, like it's proof that we need to be top 10 minimum, ideally top 7, in order to be a legitimate contender. And that's how we play our best basketball, is when our defense is dictating the pace and control, you know, creating turnovers. And I think that feeds into Wiggins's game. He's probably scared to go to the free throw line because of how we all feel when he goes to the free throw line, which is, well, one of two at best of this, you know, every single time. Because
it's a huge win and he makes the first one. Huge win. It feels like,
for whatever reason,
I can't believe it.
Yeah, 53, like, I can't understand why he's such a bad free throw shooter.
53% from the line right now. That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And it's infuriating. And you just shake your head and you're like, okay, this is not good. But you know, that maybe that's contributing because he knows he's going to have to go to the line, you know, and he's going up soft because he's taking jump shots to not have to go to the line. But I think defense will cure that. And just like CP3 is not going to shoot 7% from three for the rest of the season, I don't think Wiggins will shoot as poorly as he has been.
Wiggins made me look like Nostradamus to my 8-year-old. We're sitting watching the game. That makes it seem like she really wants to watch. I forced her to watch. It was the only TV I allowed her to watch that night.
Yeah.
And Wiggins goes to the line and I lean over and I go, watch this one. He's going to miss at least one of these. And he misses the first one. And she turns to me and goes, you know everything. It was incredible. It didn't last very long. I immediately said something wrong after that, but it was, you know, it was great while it was going. Okay. One Steph question, and then we get to our zombie one. In fact, I had two, but I'm going to limit to one. The one I'm not going to ask you is this Steph's best beginning to a season. No need to jump down that rabbit hole yet. His stats speak for themselves. The experience speaks for themselves. This is incredible. The only thing I will say, and it's a setup to this question, is that I can't ever remember somebody showing this level of dominance and then reacting to that dominance with joy. People normally snarl through it. They're angry. You know, we saw that with Jordan. We saw that with LeBron. We've seen that with a lot of people. When they win, they look back at their opponents and give them a look that says, I just destroyed you. You know, when Steph wins, he gives a look like someone who's just discovered a superpower. You know, it's like, oh my God, I can fly. Like, this is amazing. Oh, I can shoot lasers. And he's just out there having the time of his life. But it leads to this question. Okay. Cause I experience it as joy because I root for this guy. But if it was in my face, dude, if I was an opposing fan, how would I experience it? So the question is, if Steph did not play for us, Steph did not play for your favorite team, and you watched him play against your favorite team, would you love to watch him or would you hate to watch him? Before you answer that, let me show you a play from last night. This is from Warrior World's Twitter account. Who does this? It says, sicko. Here's the highlight. Pump fake, three. Just screaming at that person in the front row. Angrily, immediately screaming in the front row, and off he goes. Okay, so gentlemen, if that was you, you know, if you're in those stands, does it bother you? Would you hate him, or would you be on board and love his game?
It's tough because he's been in my life for so long. As someone who I've been rooting for, but I also, so when I think about how Steph celebrates, I think it's hilarious, objectively as I can be. And I'm taken back to when DeMarcus Cousins was on the team, he hosted this comedy event in Oakland, right? And Mike Epps was one of the comedians there in Oakland. And he described Steph, the way that Steph plays, almost perfectly, in that he said, he plays like a 12-year-old. He plays like a child. So I've never, ever since he said that joke, I've never been able to unsee it every time Steph, because he celebrates like he has no control of his body. Yeah, he something really a 12-year-old would do.
Yeah.
I don't think he doesn't choreograph anything. The way that he moves is just completely random. It's like one of those tall inflatable dolls, like outside of a car dealership, right? Like, that's why I envision Steph as whenever he hits, you know, a game breaking three. So I think I've built this up in my head to the point where even if I try to flip it, right? If I was a Lakers fan and I watched Steph do this shit, am I that angry? And I'm like, I don't know. Not really. Because it's so silly. Like, that's the only word I could think of in terms of his celebrations and his you know, his arrogance. Like, he's obviously, he has a certain level of ego. Like, you have to be this freaking good at basketball, right? Yeah. There's no getting around that. But the fact that that's the way that he chooses to celebrate this is so funny to me, because you're right. Every other person who's this good, right? Let's run it down. Kobe, MJ, LeBron, you know, any other GOAT that you want to throw in there. KD, it's the snarl. Yeah. Right? It's the tongue. They stick out the tongue. Kobe used to stick out the bottom of his jaw. And it's just these very, you know, tough, you know, tough exterior things. Steph's out here doing unchoreographed, unsynchronized dances where I'm like, you know, if I'm on the other side, I'd probably be annoyed a little bit, but not to the point where you think this dude's rubbing it in your face.
I mean,
he seems like he's enjoying himself.
You are so much healthier than I am, Ben. We knew that before this answer, right? I mean, to give you a little context, it doesn't even have to be it like over me. It doesn't have to be in a competition. I can be at a blackjack table with friends who I've known for decades. If I'm losing, they're winning and they're hell of happy as we leave. I hate them. So like, I don't give a shit what the player was. If they hit a three against my favorite team, and then right when I thought I couldn't feel worse, they turned around and like jubilantly did the used cars, you know, dance, like did the, like whatever the hell it is that inflatable thing does. I would not take that well. I'd be deep in my feelings and be angry. It's not a healthy response, but you know, it is one that I would have. MT, what do you think, dude? Would it hit you in an ugly way, or would you just be happy for the game?
It's hard to separate this, you know, like Ben said, because I've been a fan for so long. But I think it's just different with Steph. Like when I see Luka smile, you know, and he does it, it makes me mad. When I see Trae Young like do his little shiver, you know, celebration, I roll my eyes. But with Steph, it's just different, and I think it's because of how much joy he has just in the game. And like I liken it to when Brett Favre was playing for the Packers NFL and got sacked by somebody one time. And, you know, it was a really big hit. And he just smiles and looks up and they catch him on tape. And he says, that's a good hit. You know, and like he's laughing and he gives the, you know, the defender a pat on the helmet. And it's like, that's kind of how Steph approaches the game. He's enjoying it. And, you know, there's a significant amount of people and fans out there who critique the NBA for the players being prima donnas or whining, and they're millionaires and they don't act like it. And Steph is the opposite of that. He's uber competitive and wants to win, but I don't think he still comes off as if he realizes that he's playing a game, you know, and it at the end of the day, it is a game. So he walks that fine line really well. And I think even if I wasn't a Warriors homer, I probably would still like Steph. And that's why he's number one and number two in jersey sales every year.
I used to think that the most demoralizing thing that could happen to you is to watch an opposing team hit a 4-point play, like the kind of like gut punch that occupies, you know, cause they don't happen. And so like, it's like like a grand slam. It's like this thing, it's a point slip that should not go down. I was wrong. The most demoralizing thing that can happen to you is a 4-point play. And then watching the person who hit the 4-point play slowly count to four by himself, you know, like I just like, oh my God, that would
make a 12-year-old.
It'd make me so angry. It would make me so angry.
But and he hasn't even hit the free throw yet in those instances. He knows he's going to. There's like a level of ego and confidence that you're like, wait, you're just going to hit this? You're just going to automatically count the plus one? You're a jackass.
I have never even thought that out. And of course you are right. I've always just already counted the fourth, just like
Sam. Yeah, so I think we all, because he's done it for so long where you just do it, right? Like even the night thing now, we just kind of do.
Oh yeah.
We're like, it's pretty disrespectful when you think about it.
It's
like
crazy disrespectful.
Putting you in bed like a child.
It's crazy disrespectful. It's, we all know this game is over. It's just the time hasn't run out yet.
Yeah.
And it is a gigantic F you. Okay. Zombie time. Yeah. So here's the actual question. Ben was incredible in the bank heist draft. What's his take on the zombie team? So this is one that we have done in the past. The setup is a variation of that HBO show, Last of Us. Bad news, Ben, you live in a zombie apocalypse. Good news, you actually contain the solution to that zombie apocalypse. The antidote runs through your blood, but you have to make it from one end of the country to the other. Again, infested by zombies. You've got to make it. but you get to pick one member of the NBA fraternity, past or present, to help you through it, to give you some time to think. I'll give you my answer. I had a few people here. I kept flipping over, right? So like in the past, I've done Magic Johnson. I'm going to take him off the table because I've picked him once. All right, so this time. First, I was going to steal you. I was going to do Shaquille O'Neal, right? Or David Robinson. But here's my concern. There's times when you're going cross country where you need to be able to fit into like small places. You know what I mean? Like if we're going through like ducts or the sewers or something like that, big problem. I'm not going to like, my bodyguard can't stay on the outside. So it can't be that. So then I went other direction. Someone like Gary Payton. And I'm going to acknowledge to you where I'm going to die, Ben, is in those first like 20 hours of the zombie apocalypse. Like when everything's just going fucking crazy. Like, I'm not going to be able to make it through that. I'm going to try to hide. I need somebody who's going to motivate me and scream at me, which is why I was thinking, Gary, but small. What if we have to face like the horde? Like I need somebody big. So couldn't be there. So I ended up with a warrior, Draymond Green. I feel like he splits that difference, right? Like when I was really in the muck, I want to give up. I'm too afraid. Draymond will scream at me, punch me if he needs to, but he will get me motivated. Versatile enough, small enough where I think we can still do the small spaces, and big dude for the horde. So he's my zombie guy, Draymond.
Okay. All right. So when you initially asked me this, I had one person come to mind, but then as I was thinking it through, as you were explaining your answer, I pivoted. So my initial answer was going to be MJ, Michael Jordan, just because he's so competitive. Right? He'd be like, I could fucking beat all these zombies. I'm getting you to where you need to be. But I thought about it. There are a lot of guys like that. You could probably get, you know, a lot of guys throughout NBA history to do that. And at the end of it, no matter how competitive you are, zombies are zombies, right? We've seen enough movies and TV shows about these monsters. They will get you. So my mind pivoted to, we need to trick them. We need to outsmart them. So I would pick Dennis Rodman for this reason. Because you could say, Dennis, I need you to look like a zombie. I need you to play a zombie whenever we are around the zombies, right? And I feel like he looks in his current iteration, he looks like he could be a zombie where if he plays it up, the zombies are going to come for one of their own, right? So by osmosis and proximity, I am near a zombie, therefore they can't come get me. So if, as long as we're moving through, and again, it just needs to be for small pockets of time. I feel like at a, because I feel like we're going to be in a car, we're going to be zooming by, right? It's these certain areas that are, they're just swarms, right? Swaths of zombies where you get stopped, almost like zombie checkpoints, if you will. Dennis could talk us out of it. I feel like, he can just mumble some stuff in zombie. I feel like Dennis knows the zombie language for whatever reason. He looks like a zombie. And I mean that in the best way possible.
No, you're not wrong, dude. Here's the upside of zombie Dennis Rodman. I think he'd be great at the like putting zombie blood on your face, just like you're talking. Like you'd be all the way in on that and be able to like fit within the horde. Any crazy shit you needed, he would definitely do. Also, 70% chance while you're in that horde, he just leaves you. You know, like he sees something shiny and disappears. Like I'm not sure he makes it to the end of the journey. And my critique on Michael Jordan is, good chance he shoots you in the legs or the zombies get you and he gets away. You know, like
he's that competitive.
He would take it personally. Yeah. Leaving you behind. But if you could get Rodman to buy in, you didn't lose him to like the day in Vegas he'd want to spend. I think that's a solid pick.
Yeah. And I feel like if there was a situation where there was a negotiation with the zombies and they needed proof and they said, hey, Dennis, we don't really believe you're a zombie. Go eat this human. Dennis would be like, all right, I'm going to bite this. I'm going to bite this person and eat, 75% of their flesh. So I feel I do understand your point of there's a good chance he might leave me, but
just get distracted. At this point,
right. I've got to go with a higher ceiling here with Dennis.
There's a high chance I'm
dying regardless. Yeah. I'm probably going to die. You know, that I'm putting all my eggs into the Dennis Rodman basket. But there's a good chance that, again, I'll have a hell of a book to write once I get to the other side of the world and survive.
No question. Great answer. And of the things I thought we'd be litigating, who would be the best zombie negotiator? I was not ready for it. So you knocked it out of the park. MT, who do you got?
Yeah, I think there's a really strong chance too that Dennis Rodman would just end up like partying with them. Like he'd be like, dude, what are you doing? And he'd just be hanging out, like cooking dinner and hanging out with the zombies.
People don't understand them. Way. Yeah, they're like, exactly. They're misunderstood.
They're not that
like
bad. Come on over.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to go with Stack Jack, Steven Jackson. I need somebody who can handle a firearm and is 1,000% down to have his teammates back. So if he's going to jump into the stands and fire on opposing fans, I think he'll do that for some zombies for me. And I know he can handle himself and handle a weapon. So I'm going to Stack Jack.
Is there any concern at all that if you're outside of a strip club, the zombies are just going, you're going to have to buy
strippers,
zombies. Okay. All right.
I mean, to be fair, it wasn't zombie strippers that hurt him outside of that strip club. Somebody hit him with a gun, and if memory serves, he fired into the air a bunch of times to teach the people a lesson. Yeah, that's exactly right. He may also leave you. My last Warriors experience with Steven Jackson is they signed him to that year's version of a max contract, and then immediately during media day, he announced he was actually looking for a new team. So in the zombie world, he might be like, "Yep, I have your back." And then it's first day, you know, you're getting your shit ready. Like, Steven, what's the plan? He's like, "Plan? I don't want to be on this team, dude. Like, fuck out of here. Yeah. Like, I just said that was yesterday. We got a whole new deal here. Like, I hear there's a zombie negotiator I'd like to join. I'm not fucking with your loser ass.
Dennis is on his way over here.
Let's go. Wait till he hears about my incredible Draymond pick. He'll be joining us in a heartbeat. Ben, really appreciate you. Was looking forward to today for, oh shit, since the last time we had you. And it lived up to the hype. So for those of our audience who can get way more, need way more Ben Cruz in their life, where do they go?
Follow me on Twitter or X, whatever it's called now these days, at Cruise Control, is Control with a K. Twitter, Instagram, Threads, all that good stuff. And hey, I'll throw out a plug here for the Ringer Wrestling Show, at Ringer Wrestling, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, TikTok, and follow what we're doing over on the Ringer Wrestling Show on the podcast side, as well as the Ringer NBA stuff that we got going on.
They are badass over there. You know where to find us over here. With all of that in mind, go Warriors! Hopefully, see you real soon.
Good.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.